Let's get down to business. Taking a look at Wall Street. Dow Jones Industrial Average up 119 at 24,580. S&P 500 up 5 at 2,754. NASDAQ Composite down 20 at 7,692. Russell 2000 small and mid caps down 3 at 1,685. Yield on the 10-year Treasury unchanged at 2.9%. Oil up $3.74 at $69.28 per barrel. Gold up $2 at $1,269.90 per ounce. Well, the major indices flipped roles today, with the Dow and the S&P 500 up, while the NASDAQ and the Russell 2000 slipped. This was a rough week for the market, but tech companies, specifically the FANGs, had been performing well and providing leadership, and the small-cap domestic companies in the Russell 2000 offered a defensive play compared to the large multinationals in the Dow. Trade disputes pushed the Dow Jones Index lower for the past 8 sessions as big industrial companies such as Boeing and Caterpillar have weighed on the index, putting it on pace for the worst weekly performance in 13 weeks. For the week, the Dow lost 2%. That's the weakest weekly performance since late March. S&P 500 down 0.9%, and the NASDAQ declined 0.7% for the week. Now, trading volume very heavy today, nearly 10 billion shares. One of the world's largest index providers, FTSE Russell, is rebalancing the large-cap Russell 1000 and the small-cap Russell 2000 indexes. This is a significant annual market event because a lot of money tracks these indexes. Roughly $8 trillion is benchmarked to the Russell indexes, and $1 trillion is passively invested in funds that just attempt to track them. Here's how the rebalancing works. Each year, Russell ranks the top 3,000 stocks, virtually the entire stock market universe, by market capitalization, then puts the top 1,000 in the Russell 1000 and the bottom 2,000 in the Russell 2000. Due to share buybacks and other events, many companies have either increased or decreased their market capitalization. And so, indexers will have to buy or sell shares in direct proportion to the increase or decrease in the index. That means when you have a single day when all the stocks change their weighting in the index, heavy trading volume is going to occur. Trump is essentially playing chicken with our trade partners, but they're not blinking. Instead of making concessions, China, Canada, and the European Union have all raised tariffs on imports from the U.S. in the same proportion as Trump has raised tariffs on imports from those nations. Tariffs on more than $3 billion worth of American exports to Europe went into effect today. The European Union has imposed additional tariffs of 25% on products such as motorcycles, orange juice, bourbon, peanut butter, cigarettes, and denim, part of its response to the Trump administration's tariffs on steel and aluminum exports from Europe. EU trade officials have described the U.S. tariffs on steel and aluminum, justified by the Trump administration on grounds of national security. The Europeans are calling that illegal. The bloc has also filed a formal complaint at the World Trade Organization. And if the trade dispute continues, the European Union could target a second batch of American exports worth around $4.3 billion. Well, this morning, Trump fired back on Twitter, threatening a 20% tariff on European cars exported to the U.S. The threat of tariffs on autos would mainly target Germany. It could knock about $6 billion, or nearly 0.2% of GDP, out of the German economy through lost sales and profits on cars imported directly from Germany. Think Mercedes, BMW, Audi, Porsche, and VW. For now, Trump's tariffs apply to just 4.5% of all imports. It's equivalent to about 0.5% of GDP. The economy can probably handle that. But if Trump wants to expand his tariffs 5 or 10-fold, well, there's trouble ahead. Tariffs raise prices, push up inflation, disrupt global supply chains, and impair business and consumer confidence. Now, just a reminder, China announced tariffs of $50 billion worth of imports from the U.S. China's tariffs will be deployed in two waves, the first covering $34 billion worth of goods coming in early July. Also remember, Canada and Mexico have already imposed retaliatory tariffs, so ready or not, we have a trade war on our hands. Energy stocks were by far the biggest gainers of the day, with groups surging after OPEC reached a deal to boost output, though not by as much as some had expected. ExxonMobil rose 2.1%, Chevron gained 2%, the two biggest boost to the S&P 500. The S&P Energy Index was up 2.2%, its strongest day in June, as crude oil gained over 5%. OPEC members reached a deal that would result in an effective rise of production of around 600,000 barrels a day, a figure that comes as a relief to bullish traders who feared a more aggressive increase. Now, last year, OPEC implemented 1.2 million barrel per day production cuts, and they actually cut more than that, about 1.8 million barrels per day. So the announcement today, well, that just gets OPEC back to last year's levels. General Motors announcing today that it will be bringing back the Blazer. The last time the Blazer was built by GM in 2005, it was manufactured in three plants that have long since closed in Ohio, New Jersey, and Michigan. The new Blazer will be built in Mexico. GM operates three assembly plants in Mexico. The company employs about 15,000 there. American auto sales have climbed since the Great Recession, and automakers have brought back many of the jobs at U.S. plants. GM employs 103,000 in the U.S., 33% more people at U.S. auto plants than it did in 2009. The Supreme Court issued a ruling today imposing limits on the ability of police to obtain cell phone data, pinpointing the past location of criminal suspects. Law enforcement now cannot ask Sprint, AT&T, or Verizon for cell tower records that reveal your whereabouts through your phone's interaction with those towers, at least without a warrant. Chief Justice Roberts sided with the court's four liberal justices. The court said police generally need a court-approved warrant to get the data, setting a higher legal hurdle than previously existed under federal law. The court said obtaining such data without a warrant from wireless carriers, as police routinely do, amounted to an unreasonable search and seizure under the Constitution's Fourth Amendment. Roberts stressed that the ruling did not resolve other hot-button digital privacy fights, including whether police need warrants to access real-time cell phone location information to track criminal suspects. The ruling has no bearing on traditional surveillance techniques, such as security cameras, or on data collection for national security purposes. Roberts said the ruling still allows police to avoid obtaining warrants for other types of business records. Police could also avoid obtaining warrants in emergency situations. And let's be honest, if police and prosecutors want to get digital info, they're going to get a warrant. Although the ruling explicitly concerned only historical cell phone data, digital privacy advocates are hopeful it could set the tone for future cases on other emerging legal issues prompted by new technology. Bitcoin dropped to a more than four-month low today, continuing a downtrend after more negative headlines such as Japan's financial regulator ordering six digital currency exchanges to make improvements on their anti-money laundering systems. So far in 2018, Bitcoin has fallen nearly 56%. Earlier this week, the cryptocurrency world was racked by news South Korean cryptocurrency exchange BitThumb was hacked of $31 million worth of virtual coins. The BitThumb attack was preceded earlier this month by a cyber intrusion at CoinRail, an exchange in South Korea. That resulted in a loss of about 30% of the coins traded on that exchange. The 35 largest U.S. banks have all cleared the first stage of an annual Federal Reserve stress test, showing they would be able to maintain enough capital in an extreme recession to meet regulatory requirements. Although the banks would suffer $578 billion in total losses in the Fed's most severe scenario to date, their level of high-quality capital would be substantially higher than the threshold that regulators demand, and higher than levels seen immediately leading up to the 2007-2008 crisis. Banks have more than doubled their capital, their main financial defense against losses. Profits are surging on the back of the stronger economy, and bank stocks have risen more than the broader stock market over the past year and a half. So, now that the banks have passed the stress test, they want to increase dividends and decrease regulation. A resurgence of the industry, however, is evidence to some that the post-crisis rules haven't stopped the banks from making good money from their traditional businesses. The six largest American banks, J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, Citigroup, Wells Fargo, Goldman, and Morgan Stanley, have done particularly well. They made $141 billion in pre-tax profits in 2017. The big banks just keep getting bigger, so throw out the rules that led to the profit. What could go wrong? CarMax shares rose to an all-time high today. The company reported quarterly earnings that beat expectations. The stock closed up almost 13%, best day since June 2014. Haynes Celestial shares up after reports that Pilgrim's Pride is bidding for the food company. Haynes is in the process of selling Haynes Pure Protein to make the company more attractive to a buyer. United Parcel Service workers and their union have reached a tentative agreement on a five-year contract. If approved, the pact averts what threatened to be the first walkout in decades at UPS. The deal, negotiated with the Teamsters, covers 250,000 workers, mostly drivers and package handlers, and includes pay increases. Dow Jones Industrial Average today up 119 at 24,580, S&P 500 up 5 at 2754, and the NASDAQ Composite down 20 at 7,692. As always, follow along at moneyradio.com for live streaming and archived audio. The daily blog, eatthebankers.com.